Hi, you're listening to a Pod for Good Media Network podcast. We are a network that provides podcasting production services and a supportive community in which podcasters can thrive. If you're a podcaster local in the Tulsa area, we would love to have your show on the network. If you are interested in starting one, we would love to help you get started. Find us online at podforgoodmedia.com and fill out our Pod With Us form. Happy podcasting.
Episode of In Depth with Dion. In this episode, I speak with Cachet Taylor, a Memphis-born digital content creator and founder of Melanin Vibes, about how she cultivated community in Tulsa and how she overcame the backlash she received from speaking out. But first, the rundown. Local news, the City of Tulsa Reparations Commission has proposed a $24 million plan to support housing for survivors and descendants of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, as well as survivors and descendants of racist policies after the massacre. It's the first phase of a multi-phase plan to deliver equitable policies across business, health, justice, and more. State news, Afropop, Oklahoma's only Black-owned soda company, is exploding with popularity. In an interview for the Black Wall Street Times, founder Jamel Stevens said, quote, "We're still not seeing that representation that we want in soda, and so another soda company exists to disrupt and to change the beverage industry." And in national news, as President Trump continues attempts to gut the federal workforce and bypass the Constitution, Vice President J.D. Vance has falsely claimed federal judges don't have the authority to check Trump's power. The statements and actions from the White House make it increasingly likely that the American people will have to be that check themselves. And those are some of the headlines. This is In Depth with Dion. I'm your host, Dion Osborne, recording from Tulsa's historic Greenwood District. One person that I've had the pleasure of meeting here in Tulsa is someone who is a transplant who moved here as an adult, but has really used their time here to build community, to make space, and to create resources for other people to thrive. So I'm really, really grateful to have Cachet Taylor, aka Melanin Vibes,
hey, y'all,
on the studio. How are you doing today?
I am good. How are you? How's the audience?
I am doing good, and you know, we've been getting a lot of support so far.
Good.
And so I can't really be anything but grateful.
As you should.
You know. And so I guess, first of all, thank you for coming on and sharing your perspective with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I mean, it's always a pleasure and a joy to be able to share your story, you know, not on your own platform, but, you know, on your peers' platform. That's an honor always to be recognized by your peers, just to tell your story and to, you know, inspire others to hopefully do the same.
Look, so I want to get into all of it. I want to get into what made you move to Tulsa.
Yeah.
Why you created Melanin Vibes,
yeah,
and really what's next for Cachet.
Yeah.
But first of all, I want to start with how we first met so people kind of understand.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was a community walk, right?
It was. It was a Terrence Crutcher community walk.
That's mm-hmm. right. And you and me and another lady, we just kind of got randomly partnered together.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had asked y'all to handle the technical stuff. With the looking up the names on the app.
Oh, yeah. You was like, I just do the knocking. Yeah.
I'll do the knocking because I did not know. I opened that app and it's like all these names, all these details. I'm like, I don't know what this is, you know.
Yeah, and we still have to be social and talk and,
right,
you know what we're doing, but also practice safety because it's only three of us and we're knocking on strangers' doors. So I get that.
Right.
Yeah.
So I appreciate y'all for coming through on that.
Yeah.
but really, it was through that we kind of got to know each other.
Yeah.
And I kind of got an understanding of who you are and,
yeah,
and what you're doing in the community.
Right.
And I ended up interviewing you for a story in the Black Wall Street
Times.
We
did. I forgot. I didn't know that's how we connected. But yes, I forgot about that.
I had to go back and look because it's been a while. Almost 3 years.
Yep. Dang.
Yeah.
Man, time flies.
So, and that story that I wrote about you was you had created these... what do you call it?
It was the brunches at that time.
For Black women.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
It was the like Melanin Vibes meetups, and it was something that I created pretty much just for Black women in Tulsa to come together once a month through brunch. You know, just good fellowship. We never, honestly, it was always a thing. So it was always dressing up as like, you know, your jeans and your white tops, or, you know, dressing up in your pastels, whatever you wanted to do. But it was always fun. It was always something fun to do. But my thing was, we came as strangers, but we left connected. We left like we knew each other. We could support each other. And if we saw each other again, it wasn't like a, oh, I don't know that girl. Or, oh, you know, it was more like, hey, girl, I know you. Like, let's talk. Let's catch up. Let's network together. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that became something that a lot of people look forward to every single month. And so I kind of got, you know, a lot of people, you know, excited about it. And the men started to ask, well, we want to come to some stuff. Like, what can we do? And I was like, hold on. Wait one second. It's about the ladies right now.
Not your turn.
Right. It's not your turn. But then fast forwarded, after we did that for an entire year, we started doing dinner parties and hosting dinner parties. And that way men and women can come and, you know, just facilitate community. It was a lot of transplants coming into Tulsa, a lot of just, you know, a lot of people, but it was also a lot of hurt, you know, natives of Tulsa that was here and just didn't know how to, you know, come in and, you know, fellowship with the people who were coming in to Tulsa and learning their stories and learning how we can work together. And so I created the dinner table, you know, as a way, you know, just bringing back that dinner table approach within our families, bringing it to the community, because I love history. And being from Memphis, I grew up with knowing the civil rights. So I know the civil rights movement. I know like the influential people, but I also know the people that were on the sidelines pushing, you know, and facilitating these things to happen, where they didn't get the recognition or they didn't get the validation, but their impact, you know, lasts so long. So I got pulled inspiration from Georgia Gilmore and, you know, her, you know, movement around the Alabama bus boycott and what she did to kind of help push, you know, it was supposed to be for what, 3 to 4 days, and it turns into, you know, all this long, a year of, you know, just boycotting a system. And so I wanted to kind of honor, you know, those people and do, you know, follow their blueprint and create a space into Tulsa where we can create healing, where we can get to know each other, and we can strengthen the community that was, you know, that is here and what's to come from it. Because I didn't really see nobody doing that. I didn't see anybody taking the time to really facilitate healing spaces, but also fun and, in, you know, inviting spaces as well. Like, food, you know, fellowship, conversation, those are the key things that pull people together, you know, race, you know, gender, all of that, you know, economic status. But food and a good time and talking, that's what's going to bring us together and connect us even on a deeper level. And so that's pretty much how I kind of, you know, started from, went from doing brunches and then doing dinners and hosting events. And it was just became something that people started to pick up. And doing it, you know, doing it from their own point of view and starting to, you know, host events, you know, that they wanted to see. And I'm just sitting back like, yes, yes, Tulsa, take it, run with it, get it, yes. So, yeah.
And to back it up, what really drove you to leave Memphis and come to Tulsa? What's your story?
Okay, so I'll take it from the beginning. So when you say my story, I have lived many lives, many lives. And I didn't really know that until I got to Tulsa, where I started to kind of see, like, you know, God uses everything for, you know, his glory. And so Romans 8:28, all things happen for the good of those who believe and that are called for his purpose. And so I had to start to kind of think that, like, dang, like, I love so many things and I'm so good at so many things. And then I got to Tulsa, God kind of molded it all together. But how I originally moved to Tulsa was through Chick-fil-A. And so during the pandemic, it was right after me walking away from social work, from my degree in social work, because I couldn't find my niche. I was like, okay, I went from working with, you know, adolescents and, you know, extreme behavior issues and, you know, wanting to see if I wanted to become a therapist and, you know, just navigating the roads after college. Yeah. And I work with, you know, mentally challenged individuals, adults, you know, I worked in a after living facility. Well, kind of like a living facility for people who had adults who had mental challenges or, you know, on a spectrum or things like that. So I worked in that and I loved it, but I didn't get paid. I didn't get paid nothing. And so at that time, I had to go work for Chick-fil-A as a part-time gig. And I did restaurant management and restaurant service throughout college, just, you know, here and there. But I never did it, you know, as a career. And so this was my first time, you know, saying that I'm going to leave social work and I'm going to dedicate full, like my full time into Chick-fil-A. And so in that process, it was hard because I had people telling me, you're going to work for Chick-fil-A. Like, you're going to be bagging burgers. Like, girl, what is this? Like, you a college educated, very phenomenal woman. Like, what are you doing? But in that moment, I like kept going because it was bigger than what I could even imagine. Because in that point, I was learning servitude. Mm. I was learning leadership. I was learning, you know, how to be a good steward of what I have. And so in that time, I absolutely loved working at Chick-fil-A. I got to develop, you know, young leaders. I got to, you know, manage stores. I got to manage people. I got to really develop into a leader, honestly. And so my owner operator at the time started to give me kind of boost up and, you know, letting me lead. And so he would give me books and, you know, listen to podcasts. And to this day, I still listen to those same podcasts and I still refer to those same books when I'm having a tough time, because like that's where it all started for me. Like that's where leadership and the gospel kind of connected for me. And so after working with Chick-fil-A for about 2.5-3 years, my owner-operator switched and got a location into Oklahoma where his wife was from. And so it's really, really tricky to get a location where your family is because you never know where you're going in Chick-fil-A. And so at that time, it was the pandemic. It was a lot going on. Everything was closing. It was literally at the height of the pandemic when he asked me to move to Oklahoma with him and his family, me and another young lady in. Crazy enough, she was she went to school for, she was a brain surgeon. Like, she was going to school to become a brain surgeon, and she was also working at Chick-fil-A as well. So, like, this is the people that, you know, is behind the counter that you really don't know. Like, they're highly educated. Another Black woman as well. But at first, I told him, heck no, I ain't moving. My family here, like, I'm grinding here. This is where I know Memphis. No, I'm not giving it up. But then God started to work on my heart. And when he asked me again, he was like, hey, I know you said, because at that first it was like more of like, would you ever move to, you know, leave Memphis? And I was like, no, I tried that before in college and I'm always coming back. I tried that, you know, after leaving high school and I came back. But now it was different because God kind of started to change my heart. And I just knew that something was coming and I was supposed to say yes. And I didn't know what it was, but it was just that feeling that comes over you. It's like, okay, now I know it's the Holy Spirit. But like now it was like, what do I do? How do I do it? And so eventually I said yes. And I prayed, Lord, this is where you want me to be. Make this transition easy, smooth as possible. Make it to where, like, you know, everything is aligned perfectly. And when I tell you everything was aligned perfectly, I knew that I was moving. I had maybe like a month and a half, 2 months to figure out, you know, the logistics of it. And everything went perfect. Like, I had an apartment. You know, the financials got into place. My boss gave me money to move as well. Like, my parents stepped up and literally my whole entire family got into the vehicle, like packed up my apartment, put it on a U-Haul and drove me down here. It wasn't just my mom, my dad. It was my entire family. Like, my entire family, like, handed me off to my manager and said, we're giving you our baby, so make sure you take care of her. Like, we're leaving her in your hands. And so during our grand opening, they came back again. But yeah, it was literally like, I always tell people, when you listen to people's stories, God is in the mix in Tulsa. Like, if you don't understand what's going on in Tulsa, God has a special hand on Tulsa and a special light. And it's like a waiting room almost. When you're sent here, it's like a waiting room. Mm-hmm. And it's like a propel for you to rest and regroup and learn all you can and do all that you can while you're here, because the next place that you're going to end up you're going to be used in that space, because Tulsa is a launching pad. It's a, you know, it's a waiting room for greatness. And so that's pretty much how I got to Tulsa. And it was a pandemic and it was, if y'all know Tulsa in 2020, you know, Tulsa in 2020, and I was new to Tulsa. So to be able to ride down and to, you know, hear whispers of Trump coming into Tulsa. And when I tell you, everybody started to board up when I got off of work that night, when they were saying that the rally was going to take place. Well, it did take place.
Yeah.
My whole entire, the street was like boarded up. I'm like, is there going to be a riot? And at that time, all I knew about First 48. And how people say, you're going to Tulsa? It's First 48 there. And I'm here by myself. I have no one here. Like, I'm literally here by myself.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I became very like, oh, heck no. This can't be what I thought it was. Like, no. So after kind of overcoming that, I started to see like, okay, I can't be the only one. And as I pray, like, you know, God used my superpowers for good. And what can I do? He told me to pick up my phone and start recording these interactions and to get out and to do things. I was here a year. And so in that year, I would just go home, go to work, and that's it. And I'll do road trips to like Dallas or, you know, go back home to Memphis. But for the most part, like being secluded and locked down in 2020, it was difficult because I was literally here by myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and you talked a little bit about, you know, what Melanin Vibes has turned into.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about once you realized, you know, once you got that message from God and you realized, you know what, this is something I need to lock in on.
Mm-hmm.
What was your goal with Melanin Vibes?
Yeah.
And what has been the response from the community?
Honestly, when I first like pray, I didn't expect it to be something, you know, that it is now. I truly never did. And so it was more so of just like purpose in a sense. Like you're looking for purpose, you're looking for identity, you're looking for, you know, something that you know it's there, but you don't know what you're looking for. Like you have an inkling, but you don't know for sure. And so for me, it was more so like I prayed that and like I had a cell phone. And so, you know, I never really thought of myself as a content creator or influencer or anything like that. I just picked up the phone and just started like recording my interactions when I would go out to a new restaurant, when I would go out to an event. And at this time I had a friend and she was through, her name was Jeteria. Jeteria was someone who, it was a random exchange. And one day she called, she was like, oh, I'm hosting this event and I see that you're doing this and I love this. And, you know, I just want to be, you know, I want to help you, you know, whatever you need. But, you know, also I want to see if I can, you know, promote, you know, to your audience. And at that time, that was the first kind of interaction that I had to where it was like, oh, this is something, because this is someone who I didn't really know, but, you know, she heard it, you know, through the community that this was a platform where, like, you know, the Black experience of Tulsa was kind of, you know, developing and starting to kind of like, you know, showcase, you know, something that was positive, something that was, you know, unique, but it was centered the Black experience, nothing else. It was the Black experience. And so once she kind of saw that, because she came from Atlanta, and so Tulsa brought her here and as a remote worker. And so we kind of started to say like, hey, like, well, I'm going to start inviting you to these events, you know, to, you know, help you with your content and help you, you know, produce more content. And in exchange, yeah, we're just chilling, girl. We're just hanging out, getting to know each other, vibe and friends in a sense. And so, yeah, that was literally like a person who really kind of helped me, you know, really truly grasp the story of Tulsa. And she's a transplant. She's from Atlanta. And so she was just like, these events is like, you know, cool events. They weren't open to the public, but I was her plus one. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, getting me in the mix of, you know, creating the content, editing, you know, putting it out there, you know, putting the voiceovers behind it. And so from that point, I started to say like, okay, what's in the community? You know, what's going on? Like, how can I volunteer? Like, what is it that people don't know about, and how can I amplify that and give people, you know, more opportunities to show up within their own community? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about my own personal experience, but then once I kind of started to get out more and started to hear the stories from natives from Tulsa, and my heart bled, because being raised in Memphis and being like knowing my history at a young age, like going to the civil rights museums, like being taught, you know, my history from Black teachers that was in my school, like as a child growing up where everybody was Black around you, like everybody, your teachers, your doctors, like the police officers, like Memphis is, now that I know, is very rare, and it's a beautiful place. because now, like, as a younger kid, my mayor was Black. Like, everybody was Black. Like, I grew up under Mayor Harrington. And he, baby, he didn't play. He didn't play. But he made sure that our schools were taken care of. He made sure that the city of Memphis, he was one man that was loved. And even now, like, the city loved him and still love him. And, like, even now we have another Black mayor. And this is nothing new for us. Memphis has always been my heart. Like, it has always been the reason why I show up so unapologetic, because I was raised to show up as my Black. Like, I'm Black first. Like, I'm Black. Like, that's the first thing you're going to see is I'm Black. So I was raised to be that. Now, I went to college and, you know, I got, you know, more, you know, put polishing around me. But for the most part, I ain't going to change who I am. I can't.
And I hope you don't.
I never will. Like,
I think authenticity is that one thing that breaks all barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to put some respect on Memphis real quick. You know, there are some similarities when you think
very
about
so.
Memphis is a very, it's one of the Blackest cities in the country,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But a lot of the perception of Memphis is only on negative things.
Yeah, like the crime. You
crime
know,
or,
First
you know,
48, we had a, you know, our stint with First 48 too. The city chose to, you know, take it down because it didn't bring a nice positive look to the city. And so, like, yeah, it's revenue, but you don't have a nice for tourism and attraction. It's horrible for your city. It's horrible. And so that's the same thing with Tulsa. Like you said, it's so many similarities. But I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
No. I mean, I think you kind of beat me to it, because, like, I don't want to launch a campaign myself, but I would really love to see First 48 taken down in Tulsa for the same reasons that you explained.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about how you grew up in Memphis and, you know, you grew up in your Blackness, you celebrated your Blackness, you were unapologetic, there is a difference in Tulsa.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you've noticed that, where a lot of the Native Tulsans, a lot of the Black Native Tulsans, it's taken time for some of them to become unapologetic, to be confident in their Blackness, to stand up for themselves. You know, I grew up in Lawton, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not from Tulsa myself. And I remember vividly when I came here, you know, people didn't want to make waves. People didn't want to disrupt or say the quiet part out loud.
Could you blame them? And I'm going to share my personal story. Just when you're the person who's speaking up and who's not tolerating, you become the icky, ooh, don't invite her. Don't, you know, let's black. You get blackballed. You get, honestly and truthfully, when you become that, especially in Tulsa, like when you go against the grain and you start to speak up about the things that, you know, you see that are wrong. You become that person where they don't want you in the room. They don't want you in the room no matter what you're doing or what the community says. They don't want you in the room. So just imagine, you know, the people who grew up here, and that's just been the thing that's been cycling, you know, from generation to generation.
Yeah.
You become scared because, like, your livelihood. You can't get a job in Tulsa. When you start talking too much, you can't get a job in Tulsa. You can't, you know, maneuver freely around Tulsa. It's been plenty of stories that, you know, I even had to kind of check myself to say, like, okay, is it really worth it?
Yeah.
You know, not being able to support your family, not being able to, you know, work in, you know, the industry that you have, that you literally went to school for, you know, 4 or 5 years for a college degree. And you can't even work in this because you upset somebody, you know, because of what you said. You rubbed them the wrong way. It's no grace. It's no forgiveness. It happened a year ago, and it's going to still keep, you know, hunting you over and over and over again. And that's why I have a heart for the natives of Tulsa, because, you know, the history of the massacre and how that was, you know, hush, hush, quiet, quiet, don't talk about it, or we'll do it again.
Yep.
And so, like, again, it's been generation from generation cycling, just continuing. And so now that you get these, you know, influx of, you know, transplants into Tulsa from various avenues, it's like, oh, well, we want to come for the history. And then you have, like, a negative, like, you know, like, from the natives, it's like, cold shoulder. We don't want nothing to do with it. And I get it. Everybody who done came to Tulsa has taken from Tulsa. No one have given to Tulsa. Everyone has taken a piece of Tulsa for themselves, from the history side of it, from the, you know, bringing in all this, you know, new people coming in, and everybody just don't want to accept the fact that Tulsa has always been here. Tulsa has a history, mm-hmm. and let's honor that history, regardless how we're trying to move forward. Let's honor what's already been here. We dug it up. So now that we've dug it up, like, what do we do with it? Mm-hmm. Let's honor it. Let's celebrate it. Let's give a face to it, and so that we can heal. Let's create some more spaces to where we can talk about these things freely and not get in trouble, or not have to feel like we can't say these things or honor our, you know, family or our lineage or our tradition as Black people, because, you know, it's looked upon, like it's looked down upon. Let's not do that. Let's honor it. Let's bring it up. It's already been dug up. Now that let's hold a space for it to where people from both sides can truly learn and grasp and move forward. We can't do anything. The blueprint is there. Mm-hmm. And from a community side, the blueprint is there, not even from, you know, the states and regulations and, you know, what people won't honor or won't accept from a community side. I'm not even talking about the law. I'm talking about the community. We have so much more power together than we do individually. Like, we got so much that we can do to honor our history, to honor each other, and to move forward. Now, we do got a lot to get there before we can, that to happen.
A lot to unpack.
But it's not impossible. You know, it's not impossible.
Well, and that's really the spirit of Greenwood, right? You had people who, you know, some of them were descendants of, you know, Creek freedmen. Some of them mm-hmm. were Black freedmen from the South who moved to Oklahoma mm-hmm. Or Indian Territory mm-hmm. Before it was even a state.
Yep.
Right? And that's how you built that 36, 38 square block of Black excellence. Mm-hmm. And so what is your advice for people who maybe want to lock in with Tulsa, mm-hmm. but they feel this tension mm-hmm. and they don't know how to navigate it?
Okay, you're going to get uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable. And when you feel like you're uncomfortable, that's when you're in the right territory. Mm. When you feel like, I don't supposed to be here, this is too heavy for me, that's when you're in the right territory. When it's easy, you're not in the right territory, baby. You're not doing the work. You have to get uncomfortable. You have to, that little knot in your chest, it has to kind of form. Mm. That's the first step of it. It's to get uncomfortable, even as Black people. Like, for your voice to be heard, that little gotta come first. The shakiness, the quivers, the shivers, the scare, it has to come first. But you gotta find a way to break through that. Because it's important for your children to know their history. It's important for you to know your history. And we're in history now. We're making historical movements now. So you could be the next person that's in history that gets honored for their heroic acts that, you know, paved the way or changed an entire city. You could be that person. But you have to get uncomfortable first, not even just white people. We're going to talk about the wife. We're going to talk about our friends on the other side later. All right. But same for them. You got to get uncomfortable. It's easy to, you know, be in the room and you're the person who, you know, you have the power to say yay or nay. Mm-hmm. But it's easy to go with your friends. It's easy to go with your Jewish friends because y'all in, you know, the Jewish community together and money going to talk. It's easy, honey. It's easy to go to be with somebody that you go to church with. But what about the people that, you know, always getting overlooked? They always, you know, getting dismissed. How can we amplify those voices? How can we amplify those spaces? Because, I mean, it's the same thing. Once we get uncomfortable, once we, you know, pull out what we need to pull out and identify what those are, what are Tulsa triggers? Like, it's an individual. We have triggers. This community has a lot of triggers. Mm. People being left out, people being overlooked. I mean, the reparations is an entire trigger for this entire community, because how are we going to recognize, but we're not going to honor them in the correct way. I get logistic wise, I understand it, but at the same time, we cannot honor it without doing right by it. Simple. Get uncomfortable. Have the conversations. It ain't all about the money. The money is good. The money will help, you know, next generations, you know, secure their future. But you can't put a price onto what, you know, those people lost. You can't. You right. can't. That is not a price. So the money is cool, but it's not everything. It's not the end all be all. It's so much more that we need as a community. We need resources. We need education. We need understanding. We need therapy. That should have been the first one. We need therapy. We need to talk these issues and these emotions out, because all we're doing is being triggered over and over and over again without having any type of healing. All you're going to do is trigger me, upset me, and then send me in a corner and punish me for being triggered and being this way. Like, not having any rationality to my emotions. You're going to send me in the corner, spank me, and make me pay for all these big emotions that we have going on.
Well, and on that note, you're someone who's been very vocal and outspoken.
I try to be, to a certain extent, yeah.
But in an unapologetic way, yeah. Not to simply put people down,
yeah,
or call people out, but to call people in so that we can address these issues.
Yeah.
What has your experience been like? Have you been blackballed, and how did you overcome that?
Ooh, how much time we got left? Hey. Honestly, I have been blackballed in Tulsa. And that's how I can speak on it so freely. That's how I can say these things. I'm not coming from a he say, she say. I'm coming from, this is my experience. This is what I've experienced in Tulsa, just navigating and being that person where a lot of, you know, people of color, black people, you know, just people of color in general, look at my platform and they say, wow, I want to do what she's doing. I want to be, you know, the voice in my community. But also it comes with a price. I can't work in Tulsa. I can't work in Tulsa. I have a degree in Tulsa, and when I feel in hard times, and that's how I realized that no matter where I applied, it was always a denial. And I didn't take that as a, oh, poor me. It was a no, keep going, keep doing it. Something gonna come. I focus on where there's life. And so if it's not life there, okay, cool. I'm not gonna let it stop me. Mm-hmm. God got something bigger for me. God got something bigger, because all things work together, again, for the good of those who are called. That's it. So I might not be in this space where you don't want me in this space, because I've upset some people, and I take full responsibility for my actions, because, again, like, being unapologetically black, I'm not going to tolerate some stuff. But I've had to learn that my mouth, it has to come in a different way. I can't come in pointing fingers and you gonna do this and you gonna do that, because I don't play that. I had to learn a very horrible, very valuable lesson that's not how I can communicate to certain people, even though you wronged me. Mm-hmm. Even though you deserve what you got. I can't do that. I can't. And so I had to extend grace to myself first. And then once I learned to extend grace to myself, I had to leave it alone, leave it in the past. And even though I hate it, and learning this lesson as a Christian, I'm trying to, you know, be born biblical, follow the biblical practices, and just be a good human. Not mm-hmm. a good Christian, just a good human
right.
from those practices and those principles. But these people, I had to go in a, you know, not a physically apologize, but I had to show back up in these rooms with these people. I had to apologize to some of these people, because as a black woman, you know what you leave behind. You can either close the door after you leave, or you can keep a door open. And unfortunately, I could have closed the door for a lot of black people in a lot of black spaces. But once I became aware of that, I was like, oh, my grandma would, she clutching her pearls right now. She knew what I was doing. If she knew my behavior, even though they deserved it. Mm-hmm. It could have been in a better way. And so once I learned that, I had to apologize to some black people that was in that space, because as a black person, you know, you can either make it or break it for other people. And so once I realized that, okay, I had to come to terms with my wrongs mm-hmm. and right my wrongs as an adult, because let's be honest, we got to do that sometimes. And it ain't always easy. And I had a lot of, you know, dark moments and a lot of, you know, moments, because, like, my family's not here. And so I felt like I was alone a lot of the times. Like, mm-hmm. I had my fiance, but he's white. So I had to, you know, educate and explain to him even the things that I was going through.
Still that cultural barrier there.
It was still a cultural barrier. Like, I wanted my mama, because, baby, how dare you do this to me? I wanted my mama, because y'all really playing me, mm-hmm. like, playing me. real playing me. I ain't gonna get into the details, but y'all played me real good, real good. But now on being on the other side of that, mm-hmm. I am so happy and so like overjoyed that like even though like I want it to work, even though I want it to be just, you know, the regular smuggler, go to work and come home and just do nothing and just that's my life. God did not make that for me. He didn't give me what I wanted in that season because he knew that I had more to give. I had so much greater to give. And so now being on the other side of that, it's like, wow, like I'm free. Like I don't owe anybody my creativity. I don't owe anybody, you know, like this is free for me. Like mm-hmm. I create very freely. I don't create based off of a dollar. Oh, you paid me to do this, so I have to render this. No, that's not how I create. And so thank God I didn't, you know, just fall for the okie doke. I didn't. I literally cried a bunch of nights. And once I realized that, okay, girl, you've forgiven yourself. God has forgiven you. You are a child of the Most High. That ain't how he don't hold things over for you. He don't put you in a corner, you know, spank you and make you constantly pay for these things. That's not the God that we serve. That's human. That's a human experience. And although you're having this human experience, girl, the spirit is rejoicing for you right now. And the spirit, like, it's rejoicing because the things and the impact that I've done. Mm-hmm. And although I may not get validation, get credit, get recognized, be on the panels, I know who's watching. I know who have, you know, I know what my content has sparked throughout Tulsa. And I'm cool with that. I don't want the glitz and the glam. I don't. I'm just happy that I can take the blueprint from the historical moments that I've got to, you know, learn about. I've gotten to take the blueprint and I've got to run with the blueprint in my own way here in 2024, about to be 2025, that really woke people up and gave them, you know, that the fire that they needed, that they missed. And so to be able to do that, you know, turn my dark moments into the light mm-hmm. and acclimatizing it, it's been something that I've had to lean in constantly. Because it's easy to go into the back shadows, to be forgotten about, to just, you know, handle you and your business. What goes on, like, handle my home.
Yeah.
Other than, like, having this entire pressure over my back to support Black businesses. It ain't a pressure. It's something that I do. But, like, it's a pressure when you have to record it and put it out there for other people to see how easy it is to support. It's intentional, but it's so easy to support a Black-owned business. It's so easy to, you know, share your experience or share a new business on the block because 9 times out of 10, they're not going to get the marketing that, you know, other, you know, so-called bigger brands is going to get when they, you know, get a grand opening, you know, of a Starbucks. Like, people gonna shop just because it's a Starbucks. But when you get a local owned business or a Black owned business, like it goes down. Like the percentage of marketing opportunities or just foot traction from like local business compared to like higher earning like chains.
Right.
It's ridiculous. And so we've gotten so consumed with shopping, you know, the brand, the big brands, that now it's like, okay, now these brands have showed us they don't support us. They don't care about us, even with the DEI. The DEI was, I always say, Brown versus Board of Education. Brown versus Board of Education. That's when the separate but equal was ruled unconstitutional as far as being separate but equal. It was unconstitutional. And so that's where the integrations and that's where all this, you know, started to happen. And that's where we got the DEI protection and all of that from. But here it is, 60, 70 years now, it's been overturned. And everybody's starting to show us how they felt about us mm-hmm. and how they feel about us because they're no longer upholding the DEI. And I get it. Everybody have their, you know, this is good, this is bad, this is yes and this is no. I get it. But this was a protection for our community. We got the education. We got the equalness out of it. We got to be in these spaces. What did we gain? What did we learn? What can we bring back to our side of towns, our schools, and give back to teach these kids, to teach the next generation? What do we have? And that's the thing that is the question. Don't let this be the killer. Don't let this be the end all be all. Mm-hmm. What do we have to give back? What do we have to sow back into our families, our communities? Let's not think that it's the end all be all. Like we don't have like opportunity. We don't have track. No, we got something. We have a blueprint and we have plenty of opportunities. We're not limited to where we can go and where we cannot go. We're not. And we get the full autonomy to choose where we give our money to. Mm-hmm. And so why would I give my money to Walmart when Walmart don't even uphold the DEI standard? Not only that, they don't even support their employees. Like they don't. Like they became, I mean, great. Mm-hmm. Amazon too. It's convenient. It's great to go into these stores and have convenience and go to one store and not have to do anything else. But think about your great-grandmother. Think about, you know, your great-grandfather. Think about your generation, your lineage. Not even saying historic. Think about those people. Right. Listen to those stories and see that it wasn't as easy for them. And if it wasn't easy for them, we can have the best of both worlds. We can intentionally support the businesses in our community, whether black or white. And we can shop, you know, at the local resources or shop at Target intentionally because these are the places that support our community, support the creators in our community, support local. That's it.
You just gave a whole sermon. I guess one reason that your story, your perspective resonates so much with me just on a personal level mm-hmm. is because I also had to navigate, you know, learning how to communicate the problems and the solutions, you know, because I've always been that guy who was, you know, speaking, you know, spoke his mind on social media in person, not in a I'm coming for you way, but in a this is a problem that I see other people see,
right,
that they're not talking about. Let's talk about it, mm-hmm. you know. And so I've definitely had my own journey of taking time away and then coming back to the work.
That's important.
So I guess we all have to find what drives us, mm-hmm. you know, outside of the glitz and the glam, outside of the likes and mm-hmm. the comments, outside of the revenue. And my last question for you is, what's next for Cachet?
Well, I'm going to drop an exclusive. Some of my close people in Tulsa know, but I'm not going to say unfortunately, but fortunately, my Tulsa experience has come to an end, and my emotions, like, you know, I'm gathering my emotions when it comes to just my transition out of Tulsa, because it's bittersweet, definitely bittersweet. Definitely got some great opportunities ahead of me. But my new home will now be in Austin, Texas. And it's crazy because people compare Austin, Texas to Tulsa and what Tulsa is trying to become, you know, the next greatest city. And so I know God is going to use me in that city. I know God is going to use my experience here in Tulsa. And I'm just excited to see just what's next for me. And so me and my family will be transitioning in the new year. So
congratulations.
I'm so excited. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, you know, you always have support here in Tulsa, and you're always welcome to come back on this podcast and give us updates about what you're going through in life.
I will.
And I just wish you the best, because I know whatever you do, you know, you're going to make a huge impact.
Thank you. That's crazy, because I go get my hair done on Greenwood at the Lock Shop. Yeah. Shout out to Gina. And in those dark moments, you know, just bandwagoning off what you said, people have always told me, like, you're going to be great. You're going to do great things. And, like, coming from a kid, you know, who grew up in foster care, you know, lived in Memphis, you know, in very troubled neighborhoods, you don't, like, when people tell you that, it's, like, always, like, okay, yeah, whatever. But then, you know, it took for this one person, which is Gina, who's, you know, my loctician. It took for her to, you know, come in. And I'm just like, what they say, I'm silly. I was feeling mighty down, Miss Silly. I was feeling mighty down, Sophia, from The Color Purple. Mm-hmm. Just having one of those moments of just like, you know, asking yourself, is it worth it? The treatment that I'm receiving, like, is this really worth it? Like, to be. Then I thought about people who came before me, and I'm like, they did it. So I guess it is. But she always, you know, every time I would leave, she was like, I see greatness in you. She was like, I see greatness. Every time, I don't know. She was like, every time I see you, I see greatness. You're going to be, you bad. Like, I see greatness. And so from a person, a woman that I look up to, who's also just, you know, just equally as great in her own being and, like, her ministry of, like, doing hair, but it's so much bigger than that. Like, so people who get their hair done from Miss Gina, you know, it's spiritual. Like, it's a moment. Like, you clear your books just to go into your hair appointment with Miss Gina. It's
I wouldn't really. Spiritual. I wouldn't really know about that one.
You get your hair washed. You can go in there and talk to her. She's very friendly. She owns a shop on Greenwood. But when she tells me that, I'm like, okay, if she see it, I gotta see it. And so sometimes, like, and I'm gonna leave this with the audience. Like, sometimes when you're in it, you don't always see it. And it's good to have good people around you to speak life into you, because in those moments, it's heavy. It hurts. You know, sometimes you want to sit in the poor me mentality, but you can't sit in that poor me mentality. You got to say that this is happening for me and listen to those people that are around you, because those voices matter. And they're going to be the ones that push you when no one else is pushing you. Those are the people that's close to you and that's in your community that love you and that God is using to motivate you through them. So, yeah, people matter.
Well, you mattered. And regardless of whatever validation you've gotten, haven't gotten, will get, won't get, the impact is there. And it's
felt. I appreciate that. Thank you. And you know, that I appreciate. I truly, truly, I appreciate, because, and I receive with an open heart, because you don't always get that all the time. And as, you know, somebody, you know, who don't always get that, sometimes it's hard to receive that. Mm-hmm. And so this year I'm just going to receive all the love that I can get with an open heart, because the work, I'm going to keep doing the work. I'm going to keep doing what I can. And so I'll leave you with this. Before I leave Tulsa, I'm not just going to leave Tulsa. I'm leaving Tulsa, and I'm gifting the creators of Tulsa, whoever want to be, you know, an aspiring content creator who want to impact their community. I'm literally hosting an event, you know, at Archive, another Black-owned creative space in Tulsa, where I'm literally just going to empty all of my knowledge out on the table. Ask me the questions, like, in motivation, the tools that I use, the equipment, how do I edit, personal branding. Like, I'm literally emptying out my brain and just giving all of my knowledge away. And hopefully that, you know, that although I'm leaving Tulsa, like, the work will never leave Tulsa. It'll be here. Powerful. Because that's just my gift. Like, I'm always just going to give. I'm always going to sow into other people, because that's what people have sowed into me. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I pray that whoever hears your message and is going through similar issues, that they can get something impactful from it, and that it can help them, because you've helped so many people, including me. Cachet Taylor, Melanin Vibes, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dion, for having me. I had an amazing time.
For this week's Community Spotlight, I spoke with Jamel Stevens, founder of Afropop, about his plans to bring all-natural cans of culture to the Black community of Oklahoma and beyond. Hear what he had to say.
You know, Faygo, you know, we know all those kind of nostalgic grape, orange, all those sodas that we go to the store get as kids. How have you been able to tap into the community and, you know, introduce a new concept with Afropop that, you know, we're not used to? How are you able to get buy-in from the community?
So, I mean, I think, you know, we're, you know, a lot of times within the community, it's expected for us to like a specific soda or, you know, a specific, you know, pop, because that's what our grandparents drank, and what, you know, they have, you know, and what their ancestors drank, and so on and so forth, right? And so it's almost like a tradition. But I think that a lot of times when you think about these larger corporations, they don't represent us. And for a long time, they couldn't even sell to us. And that's why we had to go drink different types of soda. But I think Afropop is very unapologetic. And I think that it's very bold, right? We put a Black woman on the face of a can and put her in front of anyone and everyone, right? For them to see, and they have a choice of, you know, does that represent them, right? Or do they resonate with the culture? Or are they just proud to be able to see this type of diversity within the soda market?
This week on Mic Up, I'm sharing words from Oklahoma Black Lives Matter Executive Director Reverend Cherie Dickerson during a speech she gave at a protest on President's Day at the Oklahoma State Capitol. Hear what she had to say.
How many times are we going to have to continue to show up in spaces like this and yell out in an aggressive manner towards somebody who really isn't paying attention to what we're saying?
That's right.
the people united will never be defeated. That is a very true statement, but it's because they are taking action. It is because they are organized. They are using strategic plans, and they have decided and are determined to literally do the work. So I'm asking you today, will you do the work with me? Sometimes we're gonna have to do the work with people that we don't necessarily enjoy being in their presence. Do not lose focus.
That's all for now. Thank you for joining us on In Depth with Dion. Watch on YouTube, on Patreon for exclusive behind-the-scenes content, or listen anywhere you get your podcasts. This episode is presented by the Black Wall Street Times. Special thanks to our producer, Jesse Ulrich. And thank you to every listener across Oklahoma and around the country. I'm your host, Dion Osborne. Stay woke.